Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk. I'm your host, Damian Abraham, and once again, I'm bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved with punk, but had their life changed by the genre in a major way. And today on the show, a legend, maybe the most prolific person we've had on this podcast. My buddy, my pal, Arthur Rizik is on the show today. You may know Arthur from War Hungry, from Cold World, from Iron Age, from his work with Power Trip, from his work with Ghostmane, from his work with like Creator, with Integrity, like so many groups this guy has been involved with. Currently, he is, I think, just back from tour. I'll check in a second. From Europe with Summerland and with Eternal Champion, the godly Eternal Champion. This is a good one, and more on that in 1 second. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, head over to the email address, turnedoutpunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is answered by my brother and show producer, and normally guest booker extraordinaire, Tristan Abraham. Thank you, Tristan, for all the hard work you do on this show. But this one I booked all by myself, which is probably why it took like 4 years to finally come out. You can register your complaints at Left for Damien on X or Instagram. There's also a Turned Out of Punk Instagram page, a Facebook page, a YouTube page, a TikTok page. I think that's it. All at Turned Out of Punk on those respective platforms. If you want to support the show, tell all your friends about it. I play in a band. We are called Fucked Up. You can find out more information at fuckedup.cc and merch and whatever you would like to check out by the band. And that is it. All right, on to today's show. As I said off the top, today on the show, woof, my buddy Arthur Rizik is on the show. And if you have not familiarized yourself with Arthur's work, do so after this interview, because this will be a great precursor. And if you are familiar with Arthur's work, get ready. This is going to be a fun conversation. Arthur is someone that I met a long time ago, I guess with Cold World first, but no, I must have met him with War Hungry. I think we talk about this even on the show itself. Arthur is someone that I've always kind of looked at as being, like a real calming presence, a real, just like a good vibe. Anytime you're around this guy, it's a good hang. I know that one of the first times that I kind of like got hipped to Arthur's genius was Riley, rest in peace, from Power Trip, telling me about Arthur and how cool this guy was and how they'd gone to Europe with him. And you'll hear the story on this podcast from that trip. I think that's it for me. Check out Arthur and all the good stuff Arthur does on social media. You can find Arthur at Dehuman Onezer. So that's Dehuman and then numeral one, Z-E-R. And check out Eternal Champion and Summerland's playing a bunch of shows, it looks like, all this spring into the summer. You can find a lot of stuff over there on his page, records he's working on. The guy is prolific, like 437 Discogs entries. It's ridiculous. And he's but a child. Imagine when he's one of the ancients' ages, how many credits he's going to have. Like tens of thousands. Hundreds of thousands. Anyway. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Arthur Rizik on Turned Out a Punk. Arthur, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure, my friend.
Well, this has been like years in the making. There have been people pulling for this to happen for a very long time. And you and me have been trying, and now it's finally going to happen.
It took a lot of what do you call that? Elbow grease and grit to get here, but we figured it out.
Well, with 388 entries on Discogs, you are one of the most prolific people that's ever been on this thing.
388. That's got to be a mishap.
I think Chris O'Toole and I on an old episode of Footnotes went through it one time. And you like demolished like DFJ, Jonah.
Oh shit.
Like all the people that we thought would have been like anywhere near in this competition, but you crushed them with your numbers.
I'm pretty sure Justin has like 41 bands or something. I'm sure you actually got figured out the number at some point and put it on there. So
yeah, we show the work. We got the math to back it up. Yeah,
that sounds good.
But before we get to any of these credits, I got to start it off the way they all start off, which is, Arthur, how'd you get into punk? Remember the first time you ever came across it?
I was mostly into metal in my younger years, and I'd come across punk a bunch of times. Like, I think the first band I played in ever, which I can't even remember the name, but it was like high school. I just had learned how to play guitar. And the first band I ever played in were guys that actually had gone to punk shows in Allentown, which is like 20 minutes from here. And they were like, I guess the first I'd ever heard about punk music was probably like local bands, basically like Carpenter Ant or something like that, you know. And there was a record store called Double Decker that I would go there to, you know, find metal shit. And the guy that owned the place was like heavily into punk. And basically, yeah, Jamie Holmes was the first person who ever like sold me a punk record or anything like that, or suggested something. So I think the origin of me getting into punk is like through the record stores and like local shows, but I was always into metal. And even like I had come across stuff that I didn't understand why like my friends liked, like Cro-Mags, for example. I've had the tape for Best Wishes since I was in high school, but when I heard it, I was like, this is all like power chords and stuff. There's like no shredding and technical stuff, you know what I mean? I was like, so I kind of like was like, I don't know about hardcore. Like hardcore is just chords and stuff like that. And I was like, I need like shredding and like tapping and sweeping and stuff like that, because I was stupid. But you know, if you're trying like to get to how I got into hardcore, also that best, I guess that falls under the punk flag, is that there was one person who is like solely responsible for bringing me into the fold, and his name's Alex Metz, and he was playing in War Hungry when I was in college. And he was like, I knew him from my hometown, Lehigh Valley. And he was like, yo, I play in this band called War Hungry now. You should fill in on guitar. And I like listened to War Hungry, and I was like, same thing. Like, this is like, it's like, I don't get it. Like, it's like stoner or hardcore. And I just wasn't really into hardcore. But I was like, I love Alex. And I met the drummer, Kevin. And Kevin was like a big pothead. And then that's, of course, like Snoop Dogg said, it was like the bridge was gapped. And if Alex had never brought me in, I probably never would have played in a hardcore band ever. Like but he brought me into War Hungry. And, you know, I started listening to what they were kind of into. Nick Woj from Cold World had come to one of our shows and saw me and was just like, yo, this guy's a fucking freak. Like, he's so weird. And there's nobody in hardcore really with a long hair at that time. And he was like, he's a fucking weird long hair. He's wearing like black metal shirts on stage with War Hungry. He's like, I'm going to invite him to the house. So Nick just invited me to his house, and we started hanging out and became really good friends. And he was just laughing at all the shit that I was listening to. And then he would show me shit. And it was something about, we watched the video for Kingpin by Leeway. And I was like, I don't know why, but this is like the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. I was like, I don't know why, but I was like, this is like amazing. And I got the record and I was just like, holy fuck, like this record's perfect. Desperate Measures. It's like the perfect cross between hardcore metal and like some, like, I don't know, like some 90s sound. And I was just like, this is hard, but it's also like insane, but that insane can be hard and hard can be insane. And I was just like, I get it now. Like this, like shit that's hard is cool. And it doesn't have to be like technically anything, you know, or it doesn't have to be like edgy or fucking like talking about, like Woj used to make fun of me about Lisp being obsessed with black metal. It was like, he's like, these guys talk about killing and they're in their parents' basement and all that shit. Like fuck them. Like these guys are fucking losers. They get their ass beat. They got pimples. Like he was just like relentless about me listening to black metal. And I think at some point some of it sank in a little bit to me. And I was like, oh yeah. But Leeway was cool. And he was telling me about like the lore, and the lore kind of drew me in. And then he played me Cro-Mags one time in his room. I remember Haroon also from Cold World was there, and he put on Down But Not Out, I think. And we were so baked. And this one part, the song came in. I was like, oh yeah, cool, cool. And then there's this part where I think, and Harley's told me, I think it's like kind of like a bit of a mistake that they just kept, but it switches from like, like it goes from the snare being like ahead of the beat to behind the beat. And I was baked. I was like, oh, what? I was like, Cro-Mags rule. Like, this is sick. Like, I gotta go listen to all this shit that I've been ignoring my whole life. And that point, so long-winded, sorry, but that like from that point on, and then I listened to Cold World too, and I was like, Cold World is sick. I was like, this is awesome. And then eventually Alex couldn't tour as much, and they were going to Japan and doing all this shit. And he was like, you want to like play with us? I was like, fuck yeah, I would love to do that. That'd be so much fun. And that was pretty much it. And then I was in to hardcore, you know. I mean, there's other stuff along the way, but that's what got me to sitting here with you, basically. You know, like I liked some punk stuff. Like I was really like the stuff that Jamie from Double Decker got me into, and like the guys from Piss Jeans also I grew up with around here. They were my old heads. They were into like the Zero Boys and stuff like that. And they were also in their own bands, like Gate Crashers, Ultimate Warriors, which I'm sure you're you know, that you know of. And so there's stuff along the way, but what got me here basically was just my friend Alex Metz being like, will you fill in for War Hungry? And I was just like, yeah, whatever. And it just took off that way.
A lot to unpack there.
Sorry.
No, I'm dude. Sorry. No, that's the amazing way to start, because there, as I say, there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Starting with Alex Metz rules. Alex is such a cool.
Oh, you know, Alex, because
of wrestling stuff.
Yeah, he's works for WWE.
Yeah. Now, when I met him, though, he introduced me to Mark Henry. If it wasn't for Alex, I would have never met Mark Henry.
Sexual chocolate.
Or the world's strongest man, whatever era you want to go on with him. Yeah. But he is, Alex is such a nice person, such an awesome dude.
Yes, he's amazing.
Also, you brought up like the Piss Jeans people and Jamie and Double Decker.
Yeah.
A town of amazing taste. Like all those people, like great taste in punk and hardcore.
Very fortunate for those guys.
Yeah. Like one of the best record stores in the world, Double Decker.
Hands down. And it's it never gets worse. It's just it's always insane. I was in there a couple months ago looking for a record player, because I moved home, and I went and I was like in there, and they had like 500 of them. I was like, I'm not kidding. Like I'm saying literally, I was like, damn. I was like, I don't know. They need some guard dogs around there or something.
Oh, there were times when I like think about going in there and what was just on display, like for sale, like just like like want lists worth of incredible records.
Oh yeah. It's awesome. Shout out to Jamie.
Yeah. What a store. Amazing store. Yeah. And glad it's still, you know, still there and still
yeah
that's
same.
Not
same
like Is that high? Did you go to high school with like where all the Piss Jeans guys went to high school?
They were basically the next town over, but they're okay. Also way older than me. Sorry, guys, not way older. They're a little bit older.
Slightly older. Yeah, slightly.
This guy, and they're like a few years older than me. They went to Nazareth, which is right next to Easton. And they're just like the only band that I knew of kind of at the time that were like touring and, they're just like putting out records like vinyl. Like I was like, oh, the Ultimate Warriors have a vinyl. They're huge. So
the Ultimate Warriors, like a band that I, you know, didn't pick up on much on the time, but Gatecrashers, I was a big fan of.
They're so awesome. The Gatecrashers too. Loud at any volume is my favorite tagline from any band. So
did they have like an overlap with Carpenter Ant too? Like shared memory?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I played in Carpenter Ant for a minute as well.
Yeah.
And Dave Rosenstrauss, who was in like, he was in Rambo. He played bass in Piss Jeans and was the guitar player of Carpenter Ant. And members of Piss Jeans played in Carpenter Ant as well over time. Like Carpenter Ant probably has like 23 members. It's just like a valley band that just kept going, basically. That is Skatecore with Ray Gers on vocals. And I'm trying to think. There's a million overlaps. It doesn't matter. But
it was like a real prolific scene from around there too. Cause like also, Digger and, Weston.
Yeah. And Digger, Weston. And also Rancor.
Rain on
the Parade.
Yes.
So Carpenter Ant and Rancor shared members too. So Jamie Heim was a guitar player. Rancor was in Carpenter Ant.
So there's like a quite the family tree there. Tim Heidecker too was in the pre-Weston band.
Really? I didn't fucking know that. That's sick.
Yeah, when he was on the show, he talked about how he was always like, he always kind of hated the guys from Digger for stealing his band away from him.
That's insane. I got to find that interview and listen to it.
Yeah, it's such a cool town. Like, and also, yeah. It's like, what's the super famous hot dog place there where they like ship hot dogs?
Yakko's, yeah.
That place is all right.
Their secret sauce is one of a kind. That's what their jingle is.
So you mentioned kind of getting into War Hungry and play like War Hungry toured, right?
Yeah. The first, they were already touring with like, they did like stuff with Cold World. They had Cold World and War Hungry shared members.
Yeah.
And then War Hungry, when I joined, we played like a shitload of shows and then we wrote the LP, released it, and then basically did nothing. Like maybe like, since the LP has been out in 2012, I think we've probably done less than 20 shows. So no lie.
It was always I always loved War Hungry too, because the records were always amazing when they did come out. But the progression from that first 7-inch to that LP is pretty immense.
I like the LP. And I think that like people are always like, you should write another one. I'm just like, I can't, like, you just gotta leave it be.
It's perfect.
It's too good. We don't want to write like a crappy reunion record or something, you know?
So when did you join Cold World? When they went to Japan?
Was that the first? I think like 2011. And that was, it was Japan and we did like Australia the next year and just like a bunch of crazy shit. It was kind of the tour before the third LP came, or the How the Gods Chill LP came out. And we recorded the vocals for that LP on tour in like hotel rooms. I brought like a mic and we would get a hotel room and put all the mattresses around the TV entertainment center. And then Dan Mills would sit in there and just do vocals like every day, because the record was done for like 2.5 years, but Dan's vocals, like he would come to Philly, hit like 4 lines and then be like, all right, I'm going to get like pizza with my friends. And then it would just be done. So we're like, we have to do this on tour. And we made it happen. So
I think Dan, oh, go on. Sorry.
No, that was it. I was saying that's the timeline there.
I think Dan might be one of the most reluctant vocalists ever.
Yeah. He's insane. And now he gets rehearsal rooms whenever we have shows. And we're like, dude, what are you doing? Like, rehearsal room. I just wish I could see that. Like, him just, like, yelling in like, a studio to, like, a probably like this with his phone. Like, yeah, you know? So, I love Dan. He's the best.
I love him. He's one of my favorite people in the whole world. Yeah. But backstage of that Gorilla Biscuits Cold World show, between Siv and Dan, I felt like the least professional vocalist ever. They're both doing warm-ups. They're both like...
Dan's warming up. That kills me, man. Well, good for him, man.
Yeah. He's like you know, just judging by the reaction. Cold World. It's funny because I feel like there was a period where it wasn't necessarily cool to like Cold World. And I feel like now there's a validation that's happening. Like the world's caught up to us.
I think, yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that I all the like younger bands that are around right now are all like giving us respect and stuff. And I was just like, it's like kind of like out of the blue. I mean, I can't really take credit. It's mostly just Nick and Alex. They're what you call beautiful minds. And Nick is like got great taste and stuff. So like, if we tried to do something now, I don't even know what the hell it would even fucking be. But like back then, yeah, they definitely didn't get the respect that was deserved.
No, because it's kind of like it's Nick's imagination as exactly. Like a band. Kind of yeah. Like, you know, like the weird shoegazy stuff and like yeah. The references and
yeah. I love it.
Yeah. I've always thought it was super cool. Like I always thought it was like much more conceptual than it was given credit for. Back then, yeah. I don't think people still give it the credit for what it is.
I don't know. I think if we were to do something new, that it would probably also fall on deaf ears, and then 10 years later, people would be like, "Oh shit! Like this was crazy that they did that." Like yeah. Nick's got some ideas. I'm not gonna share, but they're fucking sick, and I just don't think that like anyone would give a shit. Like I think we'd be the only people who'd like it, and they're awesome ideas.
Well, that's like, you know, have you heard that band Empire from England?
No, I haven't.
They were like the so when Generation X breaks up, half the band becomes Billy Idol.
Okay,
and then
oh, okay, yeah,
yeah, the rhythm section, and they like. That record's unbelievable. No one cared when it came out, but that's like the main influence on all those DC bands.
I'll have to peep that.
Yeah, it's almost like you can't be accepted in your time period if you're actually going to change things.
Yeah, that's you know, War Hungry actually, I've noticed it's the same way. Like people always give me like respect for that record. And I was like, I remember like begging people to play with us when the record came out, you know what I mean? Like my own friends, and there's like, oh, I'm, you know, it's Saturday, gotta like watch college football or something. Like, what the fuck? This is a good record. Yeah.
It's kind of a mean peer group though at times. So,
oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Everybody's all grown up though, for the most part.
Yeah. For the most part.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how did you wind up meeting the Iron Age guys? On the Cold World Tour?
I think Fucked Up might be involved in this story. I think I might be wrong. In New York City, did you guys play the cake shop with Iron Age downstairs, the cake shop?
I think we're supposed to.
No, you played like a place in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
With Iron Age, right? Like in like 2010 or something. I can't remember exactly what the time was, but I remember our meeting. Like Mook from War Hungry also had the Iron Age guys staying at his house like initially in 2009 or 8 or something. I think it was 8. And they were staying there, and I just kind of was hanging there, and they were just smoking, you know, like we weren't like we were just like chilling and didn't really get like super introduced. I think I offended Wade because he was hungry, and I offered him a half eaten egg salad sandwich, which was his least favorite food of all time. And he was like, the fuck I want this for. I was like, oh God, this guy hates me. And then I don't know, like a couple weeks later, like I had been hearing about Tarpey, and Tarpey was like, well, Tarpey's into like black metal and traditional heavy metal and all this shit. And I was like, oh, I'm into all that. I'm going to like introduce myself to him. And it was a show at the Cake Shop. It was Razzle Dazzle, Iron Age, and some other bands I can't remember. Like bands that if I told you, like, oh, that's a crazy bill. Like it was a crazy bill, but I don't remember who played. And Tarpey was in the backstage area wearing like some kind of black metal shirt or something. I don't remember what band. And I was just like, yo, I'm Arthur. I heard about you. And he was like, yeah, I heard about you. And I was like, we should start a band. And I was like, immediately, like me and Jason were just like top dogs. And basically that was it. Me and Jason just got each other's numbers and we're like showing each other bands all the time. And then Wade came again and hung out, and I redeemed myself with him by jamming with him. And we just became like guitar nerd friends. So like me and Jason were friends like with music and like weed and stuff like that. And then me and Wade became friends on like country music and guitar and like stuff like that. And from there on, I flew down to Texas to just hang with Jason. And I rode with Iron Age, Mammoth Grinder, and Hatred Surge to Sound and Fury in 2009 in the van with them. And we were just like doing like the stupidest shit. Like we had a lot of weed on that tour, and I've gotten a challenge to eat all the roaches. So I would like, we'd be passing a joint around for like 20 hours at a time. And every time we were done, I would just eat the roaches. And I remember getting to like a bathroom and looking at myself in the mirror and just being like, what the fuck? Like insane. It was like, so I don't know. It was like stupid. And then after that, Wade saw me play with War Hungry, and he realized that I was like capable of playing guitar. And he asked me not too long after to fill in for Iron Age, which ended up being Iron Age's like last real tours. It was in 2010, I think, of winter. And you guys were supposed to play with us one night, and there was like a snowstorm or something on that tour. It was in the Midwest.
Was it like Nebraska or something?
Yeah, some shit like that. It was like Nebraska or Kansas or something like that. And we showed up to the venue and there was snow everywhere and nobody was anywhere. We're like, oh, I guess. And it was like a little bit like before everybody was like really on their cell phone game. It was just right before that.
Yeah.
And we were just like, well, I guess like we don't have anyone's number. We can't figure anything out. So we just left. So there was no show.
I remember that show because I think we did a Day Trotter session that day, and they were supposed to come meet you guys and play that show.
Shit. And there's just no show.
There's no show. And it was like, they're like, yeah, you can't, don't even cry.
Yeah. It's like, I was like, what? I was psyched. I was like, that's going to be sick. I was like, it's going to be a well-attended, like they're playing metal shows, and they've just broken into like that scene kind of with Sleeping Eye and all that stuff. And I wanted to play like a couple of hardcore shows. So I was like, those are going to be the sick shows.
Yeah. And yeah. It felt like Iron Age, and I think Power Trip crossed over much more successfully, but I think it was always like one step ahead of where kids would wind up going.
I mean, dare I say Iron Age paved the way for them, but I think there's definitely some of that, because they were the first band to get signed to like TP Records. Was like, I mean, so nowadays every metal label wants to poach hardcore bands, but like back then it was like, oh, TP Records, that a label that had like, I don't remember, like a bunch of like bigger stoner stuff. They were like, oh, they want like, we're on a label with other like stoner metal bands and stuff like that, and metal people were kind of like checking them out. So but that was that was like around the same time Power Trip were doing like 7 Inches, And then they got like the Southern Lord deal, which was like the first real time it had successfully been pulled off like that. It was just sort of perfect timing.
Yeah, it felt like it was Iron Age was just, even with the TP thing, like it worked, but it was almost like a little too cerebral in some ways. Like it never really like got them in front of the kids that I think would have responded to them.
Yeah, you know? No, I'm with you 100% there.
The Sega demos are unbelievable.
Yeah, that came like a little bit after, and that was a lot of fun to work on. And I think like that was also a time where like Wade just came to my house with tracks, and I hadn't even really been good at recording too much, but for some reason he trusted me to make them sound like insane, which they do, like not in a good way. I mean, it is good.
It's awesome.
It doesn't sound like fucking like Rick Rubin produced it, but it sounds like, you know, it sounds insane. It sounds more like an 80s, like early Metal Blade type of thing, you know? So, but it was fun. And that's a great, great demo.
Yeah. Like it's really, I guess it speaks to where the band could have gone, you know, yeah. For like another LP or something.
I mean, there's like at least a whole album's worth of stuff like demoed out, but it's just, it's a hard thing to try and even like even opening it and listening to what's there. We had been working on stuff for years. Like I would go down and record Wade and Jared jamming together, and they did a bunch of stuff before like COVID. They had done like a shitload of demos and it's cool stuff, and it could have been a pretty insane record altogether had we had gotten the fair shake and some time to work on it together as like a group. So
so how long after is it before you start doing stuff with Power Trip? Pretty soon, right?
I mean, so if we're on the Cold World tour in 2012, like I'd already done a 7-inch with Power Trip, the Locking Out 7-inch.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That was probably like 2010, I think, right?
Yeah, I think 2011.
Or 11 is when it came out. The end of 2010 is when we actually, I think, mixed it, and I didn't record it. I just mixed it. It came to me. I think Riley was really into the idea of doing that, and then everybody was psyched on how it turned out. So they came to Philly to do the first LP. That the recording of that was 2012. And in between that time, like 2010 or 11, 2011 and 2012, Cold World had played with Power Trip in like, so I think it was called Breast Fest maybe, but it was for breast cancer awareness. It wasn't like a porn fest.
Yeah.
But, so it was, we played that and they were just like, I remember talking to them in the park and like, we want to do it with you. We want to come out to Philly. We want to like do this. We got Southern Lord doing this and like whatever, et cetera. So I mean, they came out in 2012. I had my recording chops together by that point, but I didn't have a lot of gear. So I was like scrambling, and I turned my house into a studio, which was like, it had a really big ceiling. So we figured it out. And at that point we just started tracking for like 7 or 8 days at the house, like total, like I want to say punk vibes, because I was like duct taping room mics to the ceiling, and I was like doing like dumb shit like that, and like just trying all this weird shit. I was like, because I had the information and I had like some chops and experience, but I was still experimenting so much to try and figure out why like Hell Awaits sounded the way it did, or like Fate's Warning, or fucking like Ride the Lightning, or any of those records. I was like, why do these records sound the way they do? And I was just experimenting so much. And I like, I'm still grateful to all of them for bearing with me, because obviously we ended up with Manifest Decimation, and it was a pretty like exciting time when that came out. Even though they didn't pop off right away, it took like a minute for people to go worldwide with it. You know, like when it came out a couple months later, we went on tour with Bane in Europe, and it was like, at that time, it was like every show would be a little bit different. Like people didn't really know the Power Trip stuff, or there'd be like one show where it was like all these random like metal people, and like nobody knew Bane or something like that. So it was like a weird tour, and it was such a good time, but like they didn't pop off right away. It took like a little bit of sinking in to the hardcore people to like really fucking get it, and for the metal people to come along. Sorry, rather that.
Because it's almost like Power Trip was like building its own audience, like a new type of audience.
Yes, it was, and it was like people, you know, there's that famous obituary video turned inside out, and it's from a live set, and I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it's just basically the whole video is like, it's almost comical because people just keep jumping on the stage and stage diving for fucking 5 minutes straight. It's like, it's the most insane thing. And this is like crazier than any hardcore show I've ever seen in my life. It's just like people just going insane for obituary. And I feel like Power Trip surpassed that at some point. They were like, they not only got like crazy stage diving shit, but they also have people like fucking like metal people getting their asses kicked in the pit and stuff like that. Just like crazy shit. Like, I don't know. It was insane. But in that European tour was somewhat bleak. It was really funny a lot of times, so many good stories, and just like the first time being in Europe was insane.
Can you tell the story about getting pulled over?
Oh yeah, that was from that tour. So, so we were like pretty desperate at that point. This is Power Trip, Bane, and a band called Blackout from Australia, and we were pretty desperate for weed at some point. We were in like Italy, some random part of Italy that was near Austria or something, and we had scored a bag of weed, and everybody was just in the best mood. We were basically like, yeah, like snorting the weed and like just like fucking partying, you know. And we're like, we got like enough to last us maybe, I think it was like close to a half ounce maybe, which for us back then would have lasted us maybe like a few more days on the tour, maybe the whole, I mean, depending on how everybody was doing. So we were psyched, and for some reason Riley gives me the weed, and he decides to go with Bane in their van, and we're all like asleep. We're all weeded out. We're like tired, and we get into the van. We go, we stop at a McDonald's, get some breakfast. I'm so tired, I don't even eat my burger, and I just fall asleep with the burger in my fucking hand. And I wake up to like concerned faces like this, like, we're getting pulled over. We got to do something with the weed. There's dogs everywhere. And I was like, okay, guys, right, whatever. And I literally went, it's like, I'm going back to sleep. And then I hear, ooh, ooh. And I was like, fuck. I was like, they're serious. So everybody starts obviously eating the weed. And while we're doing this, I remember this so distinctly of watching the Bane van just drive past us. I was like, motherfucker, like, this guy's got out of it. And we're just sitting there like stuffing weed in our face. And it's like a movie. You slowly seeing this like cop with a dog approach the door. And we're like, okay, we're done. And then the singer of the band Blackout just goes, holds the bag. It looks like we made no dent in it. But there was like probably like a quarter of weed left. And our driver, you know, he was already annoyed with us because we were so annoying to him. But I thought he was going to rat us out. He didn't. And at that point, I grab the bag and I grab like, it was almost like a handful of weed. and I grabbed the McDonald's burger and I shoved it in the burger and I closed the burger and the guy opens the door. And I was like, all right. And they started like, okay, we have dogs. We're going to come search your car and we're going to do all this shit and blah, blah, blah. And you guys probably have drugs on you. So just give it up now and we won't keep you for so long. But if you don't, you guys are going to jail for a long time. Obviously the old cop spiel. And, I just like, fuck. And I just pull out the burger right in front of the cop. There's video of this, by the way. And I'm sitting there and I take a bite out of the burger and I'm just eating. And he's 2 feet from me. He's like, what are you doing? I was like, dude, I'm sorry. I just fucking woke up. I didn't get my breakfast. Just, you know, let. And he's like, all right, whatever. And I'm just sitting there eating the burger while they're searching all of our shit. And I take the last bite and they bring the dogs in like a fucking movie. It was insane. And the dogs are like going nuts. They can't find shit. They can't find the bag. They can't find anything. So we just fucking were like, all right, sorry guys. I don't know what to tell you. We told you we don't have anything. Another aside from that real quick is they pulled us all out of the van and Hood, you know, Hood is, it was Power Trip's longtime merch guy, roadie, general manager, whatever you want to call it. And Hood's
been
just
on the show.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Hood was on the with Riley.
Okay. So Hood is standing there and there are two cars, the two cop cars, one of them's like a BMW and the other one's like a Peugeot or something, like some piece of I don't remember what it was. And he was just, looks at the cop while they're trying to ask me a question. He goes, hey, why does that guy have a fucking BMW and you have that piece of shit car? And they're just like, like, what? And he's just roasting the cops while we're all standing there. Cause he's like so relieved that we ate all the weed that he just feels like ultimate freedom. And also they brought the dogs. One last thing, they brought the dogs over to the singer of the band Blackout and they're like, we're gonna put this heroin in your pocket. We were all like, whoa, 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 no. Like, we're just training the dog. And we're like, like, what do you mean? Why would you do that to us? Like, and they put in the dog, and the dog couldn't even find that. He didn't even know what was going on. I was like, did you even do it right? I don't know. It was really funny, but everyone was like, it was, and the fact that it was like 6 in the morning or whatever, and we were all like, so still baked and also like tired. It was just like, it was so bizarre. And watching like Riley drive by, I was just like, why did he give me the weed? Why didn't he just take it? I don't know. Why? I don't know.
He told me that he kind of they looked at you at that tour as being like kind of the road dog, like the veteran guy.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I definitely have, like, in situations where the thought of, like, having to deal with a cop or eating a quarter ounce of weed, I will choke down that quarter ounce of weed as fast as you can.
Oh, dude. Ugh. And you know what? On the burger, it was kind of brutal, honestly. I don't know how they didn't fucking notice, dude. I must have had weed in my teeth and shit. Like, it was hard to, it was like nugged up. It was hard to crunch down. It was your European weed, all stemmy and dry. Yeah. So I was like, this is great. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, it's one thing to smoke it. It's another thing to have to eat that stuff.
Oh, it sucks. I've done it so many times though at this point. So
yeah, it felt like you know, in Iron Age too. I remember Iron Age going on tour with Coal World and Sex Fit and Mind Eraser. Like kind of, I don't know if all four played together at the same time, but they were all kind of going on tour together around that time. And it's like, I cannot think of four more insane groups of people.
It's kind of insane. I also think that now that you're saying Mind Eraser and Sex Vid, I think Mind Eraser played that show with Iron Age and Razzle Dazzle and also played later with Sex Vid at another place in Brooklyn. But I'm just remembering now because you saying that. And DFJ played drums in Razzle Dazzle. And I had never even met anybody in the band before. I never met. That's also the day I met DFJ. So oh, yeah. It was like the same day I met Tarpey and DFJ, I'm pretty sure. Pretty insane. So
and I guess Haroon too, right?
Well, Haroon, Nick introduced me. Haroon is like one of my best friends of all time. And what's funny is that Nick introduced us one day because Haroon needed a ride from the airport. Nick was working at the chip factory back then. And I picked up Haroon and I shit you not, within like 2 hours, we were just like, yo, let's be friends forever. You know what I mean? Like that stepbrothers thing. Like, do we just become best friends? You know, like whatever. It was just like, we instantly just like clicked on. I also think Haroon probably thought I was extremely weird, but those guys were like very accepting of my weirdness. And I always love them for that because I couldn't see it. I was just like, these guys are weird. I'm not weird. Like, you know?
Yeah. But that's the thing I loved about that time and like playing with all these bands is like, everyone was kind of like weird and hardcore can be like very conformy at different times.
Yeah.
But it felt like a scene of just chemically unbalanced.
Oh yeah. Big time. Big time.
And that's why I fit in so well with it. I think I really fit in my place.
I really did like find the place there. And honestly, like I always tell Nick this still to this day, Nick from Cold World, I'm always like, dude, I wouldn't be doing anything if it wasn't for that one time that we like listened to Leeway, you know, because like, I really think that sent me on a whole different trajectory of like open-mindedness to like any type of music really. Whereas like, I was probably on my most edgelordy in the sense where I wasn't even listening to music that had clean vocals. Like I was only listening to like, if it wasn't like aggressive, you know, screaming or whatever you want to call it. Like I wouldn't even like, I'm like, oh, I'm not listening to clean vocals. Like how corny is that? You know what I mean? Like, it's so insane.
But that's just like part of it, right? Like you have to go to like the furthest extreme just to know you can go there. So
it's part of being like 19 to 23 or something like that. You just try and find your place or whatever. And you're like, you get like, you're just like, oh, I'm like, yeah, fuck all this shit for no reason, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like for no reason. So, but I'm glad that was like it and a quick, like in and out type of deal. But those guys like got me into like all types of cool stuff as far as like even Biohazard and Life of Agony too, which I'd never actually listened to. They played out. They're like an Allentown favorite. Like people love Life of Agony here and in Wilkes-Barre and shit like that. So I never really, I know it about them. And then we covered Underground with War Hungry. And I like listened to the rest of the record. I was like, this is fucking insane. Like this, I don't even know what this is. Like you can't pinpoint what like River Runs Red. It's like somewhat like, it's like emo almost. It's like depressive music. And then also like New York hardcore in a sense. It's harder than anything. It kind of sounds like Typo sometimes. And like, I don't know. It's like, it's better than Typo. I don't even, I'll say that for sure without hesitation.
There is though, like a real kind of like emo, like emotional, like true emotional stuff that happens to like New York hardcore after a certain point.
Oh yeah.
You know, like maybe it's sheer terror that brings that in, or but neglect, even like there's all these bands that are just like super in their feelings and hard as shit.
It's cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Life of Agony is just like, I don't know. It's almost like gothic. It's almost like super depressive. Like when you really listen to the lyrics and stuff, I know some people when that stuff was coming out, they were like, it's fucking corny. Like, fuck this. Like, this guy's like crying or whatever, you know, like, but I think that just, I don't know, as a person who discovered Life of Agony in the late 2000s, I was just like, this is insane. It's genius. This is the hardest music I've ever heard. And there's no screaming on the record at all. It's all just like vocals that sound kind of, I don't know, borderline Elvis-y or something. I don't know what you would call it, that kind of howling stuff.
Well, it's like you were talking about earlier, like, you know, it's almost like you can't really be appreciated in your time because you're doing something new.
Yeah.
And there's something like super conservative about
rock. Yeah. I mean, and that's ironic too, but it is like people don't open their minds enough, and it's supposed to be the most open-minded thing. It's for people who are just, you know, shit on more or less. So, or didn't know why they were different, but they were. So
it feels like it goes in eras though. And I feel like this era, you know, I don't think it's like that. You know, I think the walls have broken down, like the post Cold World, post Power Trip kind of metal and rap are just part of the palette.
Oh now. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I agree with that fully. I think like there's like some kind of renaissance going on, but I don't know what it is exactly. but it is happening, obviously. But like a lot of stuff is like, I always hear like Nick and the guys talk about how like shit that would have never flied in like the 2000s that's flying now, and it's cool. Like it's definitely a good thing. But although I don't listen to any hardcore right now, like in the last, I don't know, like I would say like 6 years or something like that, I'll check bands out, but I'm mostly just listening to like, I've receded back to listening to like classic rock and like heavy metal, and then like I don't know, like dream pop and shit like that, and like Barbra Streisand and the Bee Gees and shit like that. Stuff my dad always had around the house and stuff. So
I thought you were gonna say you regress back to like when you were 19 and it's just like pimple dude metal now.
Yeah. No, I still love black metal, but I really only listen to like just weird shit. Like I met a dude in Greece named Kostas who put me on to all this like crazy like traditional Greek music, and I don't know why he felt like he wanted to do that, but he was like, I'm gonna email you a bunch of Greek records. I was like, all right dude, whatever, I'm not gonna listen to them. And then I played them, he sent them to me, and like I think I've listened to
like this one record more than anything in the last, I don't know, like 6 years. Let me see. Oh, this one. This guy's name's like,
I can't say it. It's like Manos Hadjidakis.
Okay.
And it's just like traditional Greek music. I don't know. And like, I listen to that all the time, and like Dead Can Dance and stuff like that. But I haven't really listened to much new hardcore just because I'm not like going to the shows. I don't know like the lore, and I'm not listening to podcasts. I'm working a lot. And yeah, I don't know. So
it's also something that like at a certain point, you know, you're going to lose touch with what is at its core, because like a new group of kids are going to take it and do something different with it.
Of course. And they should, obviously. And people who have to bitch about that shit are just getting old. That's all.
It's weird. I've met people like who aren't even involved in punk and hardcore in any sort of way that I would define as being punk and hardcore.
Yeah.
That still claim some sort of sense of ownership. Over it. And it's like, you can't hold on to this forever. Like, that's why it's going to be there for someone younger than you.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, at some point, you know, like these shows that are like, you know, 2,000, 3,000 people or whatever, they're going to turn into like 300 people, even if it's in like 20 years. It's like, it's not going to last forever. It doesn't matter whether it's now or later or whatever. It's just like that stuff, people grow up. That's why like every insanely successful person who's doing something cool has some kind of tie to punk or hardcore, because at some point you're just like, I'm getting older and I don't, you know, I want more comfort, whatever it is. I want like something else. Yeah. Like people in different, you know, people used to get into like shoegaze bands or like metal bands or like whatever, like straight pop punk bands, whatever it was, people would get into something after they were like, okay, like we're getting destroyed by younger bands. Let's do something else. Like I'm done with this. Like I don't have the feeling that I can write something like this, you know? So like people always move on to something else and then end up doing something awesome. Or like maybe they're not in bands. They did become actors or comedians or whatever the fuck. So I'm hardcore. The world's biggest little community.
Well, that's what post-punk and post-hardcore are to me. It's like people that were like, oh, I'm post this now. What am I going to do? And it still affects you. So it's still part of you. Yeah. But yeah, like you're right. Like there's just so many, God, like everyone interesting, it seems like had some sort of like, you know, place in this at some point. But then it's also interesting how, you know, like when we were younger, and I'm older than you, but like when I was younger, certainly, and when you were younger too, there was like this sort of like, there was like only so many paths you could go in terms of like alternative culture, you know, like alternative music, punk, metal. When I played a show with your friend Ghostmane, and I realized like how small my world is compared to like this other world. Like there's like whole other scenes, like emo trap, like there's all this other stuff now that's, you know, like it's limitlessly big underground culture, and it's no longer just, you know, punk, hardcore, metal, or alternative.
Well, it's I mean, Ghostmane's a great example of the way things can change. And just, I mean, right now I just got back from literally doing sound for him at Madison Square Garden, and people were going insane. And it was, and he was playing, like he had like three straight hardcore songs that people like TikTokers were like moshing to or whatever, whoever's out there, like just people were like going insane because they just couldn't even like believe what they were hearing. Like even like the Suicide Boys who he's playing with, they were playing after, they're like more like straight up rap, but like when people were seeing like the rap and like the full band. And I don't know if you know this, but to talk about Ghostmane just a little bit, his cousin is this guy named Ron who was in Death Cycle, and he put Eric onto like Leeway and like Cro-Mags and stuff like that when he was younger, because Eric was listening to like kind of like some of the more I would call it like sceney metal stuff, like Atreyu and stuff like that. And and his cousin was like, hey, just check these bands. He's still the dude, still he like works at Generation Records in New York, and we just saw him the other day. But like he even has like a real connection to hardcore. Ghostmane came to a Cold World show on the first tour the first like US tour I ever did with them, and he was at the show moshing for us, and there's like a video of it, and I was like, this is insane that like, I don't know, like however many years later, we're like 10, 12 years later, you were moshing at my, for my band, and now I'm doing sound for your Madison Square Garden. So, you know, and producing his records and stuff. So,
yeah, it's interesting how, you know, once again, like you said, anyone who's doing anything interesting or cool, like you can connect it back to this for the most part.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And it never stops, right? Like,
yeah. And I mean, it is something that you like. And like I said, I got it. Local shows was like high school for me. Like, I didn't know. I just wanted to play guitar. I probably, if I would have never gotten a punk, I'd probably be paying to play. Like, I'd probably be selling tickets for my shred metal band at like, we're like opening up for like, I don't know, like something solo, like some, like, I don't know, like not like, I'd be opening up for like a shitty show, paying, having my family buy tickets to my show to do like tapping and stuff. And like, I never would have had any success at all. I would have just been like lost, you know. Creativity, punk opens up like your mind to like different shit. Even like, you know, like people who are like, you know, who are like the opposite of punk probably still at some point like started with that. I don't know. It's just something that's easy in high school to like, there's like cliques or whatever. And then when you meet the people who play guitar and they're into like Pennywise and AFI, you know, that's, you start to learn about that stuff and it usually just takes off from there. So.
Yeah, it's like you said earlier, but you know, recording that first Power Trip LP, like where you're taping mics to the ceiling, or
you don't
wait to figure out how to do it. You do it and then figure out while doing it.
And, yeah.
And there's like so few, you know, metal, you're not supposed, like so many genres, you're not supposed to get up there until you're like really good. Like, don't get up there unless you're like the best.
Yeah.
And punk, it's just like, yeah, get up. Like, fuck, yeah. Who cares?
Just, yeah. And as a producer, I learned that 99% of the time, people don't give a fuck about anything except for the vocals anyway. So it's like, if you can't play guitar, no one's like, man, like, fucked up. We're so good. But like, the guitar playing, like, they missed a chord. And I don't know, it sounded like he was fretting the octave a little bit too hard, and I don't know, like it was all fucked up, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like that. So
come produce a fucked up record, please. All right, save me.
I'm on my way. You heard it here first.
It's going back to like Power Trip and Iron Age. It's interesting how there is that kind of like Texas sound that develops, and it's the sort of like synthesis of punk and metal. And I guess Bitter End too. They're kind of like the forgotten third.
Yeah, they do get mentioned sometimes, but that, like, because they're more on the hardcore end of things, like they don't get mentioned often with like Iron Age and Power Trip. But they're definitely a big part of the early Texas hardcore scene. And I don't pretend to know like a shitload about it. I kind of came in right as it was about to pop off. And I almost moved to Austin after that Iron Age tour that I was talking about. Wade was like, do you want to play with us? And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to drop out of college and move to Austin and like play in Iron Age. So, cause I was just like, these guys are so cool. I just want to fucking hang out with them forever. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
There's no band that had a cooler vibe. Like when Chase is on the side of the stage and it's just like, ribs licking the bass neck and shit. Like this. It's just all the lineups. Every lineup of that band was awesome.
Just lots of chaos.
Yeah.
As a person in your like 20s, like chaos is welcome. So it was definitely the best time.
Yeah, like true chaos. Like that. I think that's the thing, is like a lot of bands, you know, it's like a fake thing, but like,
yeah,
like. Very chaotic tours. Were you on that was it Iron Age Cold World on tour together?
No, it's Trash Talk Iron Age Cold World. Yeah. I was not on that tour. I think it was right before I met all those guys. That was like the last tour that had happened. And I wasn't even in Cold World at that point or Iron Age. I was just kind of like Mook's friend at that point. So and I was like into like I said, noise, black metal. I was even like considering trying to become a progressive trance DJ. I was like, I'm gonna get into like progressive trance. I was like, this shit rules.
Well, that's a huge other scene, right? Like you did records on Hospital Records even.
Yeah, definitely. I've done like a lot of noise and like you know, like shit like that. I did all that stuff right before I met all those guys. And that's another thing. They would laugh at me for like going to a show or something, like going to like a noise show. Like, what do you guys do? Like you just stand there and like go fuck yeah to like a guy who's just, you know what I mean? Like I don't know how to explain it, but fuck you rules. Like just, it's what I hear in my head, you know, just chaos. I think also me being ADD is part of it too, because I mean, now everyone's ADD, like all kids just are born ADD. I feel like everything is like 1 minute long. Everything is like, but like when you listen to like a great, I don't know, like a great like noise record, like Hannah Tarash or something like that, or like the Jiro Jiri or Merzbow, like a Japanese shit, there's like long ass records that they're like 60 minutes of 11 second blips of like, and then it goes like, it's just like constant like madness, like in chaos. It's like, I don't know. I could fall asleep listening to that shit. And I still sometimes will put it on while I'm driving and thinking and just, you know, it's great stuff.
So. It's on another level, like in everything, like collectible wise, like record, you know, the suitcase and all this crazy shit. Like, it's just like everything about it is just like so inaccessible. It's just designed to be completely inaccessible.
Yeah, totally. Well, and that's kind of like black metal was also kind of like that as well. But, you know, I've kind of like, I don't know when it happened, but at some point I was just like, I think it's easy to be inaccessible. It's very easy to be inaccessible, and to be inaccessible and then for a reason is one thing. That's why like all the like hospital stuff, like from the early days are like so expensive or whatever, but like also rare, like black metal shit from the 90s. But to saturate that world with just like no thought, there was just too much of that at one point. And I also like was really getting into my work as in producing, and like I wanted to help bands realize their goals and like help them get to their goals and try and make them happy, because I'd been laughed at so much in my life for trying to like incorporate noise into stuff, and like whatever ideas I had mostly would get like laughed at, dubbing stuff to cassette and then sending it out for pressing and shit like that. I always wanted to change that for people and like let anybody do whatever they want to do, because who the fuck knows what's right and what's wrong. And I think like getting into like production and starting to have new heroes like George Martin, for example, or like the guy who produced the Beatles, and then like just people who were just into like kind of getting people, let them make them comfortable to do their thing and point them in the right direction, made me want to make more accessible stuff, more like stuff that people could. I want, like with Eternal Champion, I didn't want to, like, there is a scene where people are like, we're going to make 11 records and sell them for $100 each, like totally obscure heavy metal. And we're going to like hide our names and do all this shit. with Eternal Champion, I was like, I don't give a fuck. Like, I want these songs to be like stuck in people's heads. Same with Summerlin's. I want to like people to listen to it. Like if they're bummed or they're like working out or whatever, I want them to like jam it. I don't want to like just make stuff for no reason. You know what I mean? Like, I want to make stuff that people just consume. And I think producing is the thing that got me really down that line. Like even the first Power Trip record was the beginning of that in 2012. And like, even like Blake was pushing me a lot to do stuff that I didn't know, like bigger recording techniques and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that's kind of where I grew. I didn't grow out of like noise and black metal and like stuff and like obscure shit. But I really, it's more of like, I have to be in the right mindset and have to like give it the attention it deserves or whatever. Otherwise I'm just jamming like on other shit, you know?
One, it's just, it's like, it can become all consuming and unending, yeah. Like the quest for obscurity.
Yeah.
And it eventually becomes kind of a gimmick. Like it's one thing. The reason these bands were obscure is because they weren't mainstream and there wasn't, yeah, sort of that quest to find.
Exactly. Them. Exactly.
And
nowadays it could just be anything, like anybody. Like you could probably make a sick record right now. And like, you know, like, I mean, you have the tools.
I might not have the wherewithal to do it though.
I don't know. It has to be some kind of idea, you know? So
yeah. Well, there has to be like, yeah, like a thesis going into it, or some sort of like, and that's, I guess, what makes that the Japanese noise stuff so interesting.
Oh, yeah, of course.
There's always that intention. Yeah, there's always an intention to it, you know? And I think that's the other thing about the hardcore stuff. Like, I find that there's a lot of bleed over between those two scenes
in Japan. Yeah, big time, big time. I mean, I think like the way that the Japanese punk and hardcore albums sound is very like saturated and abrasive, you know? So I think like when the guys showed me Gizm for the first time, for example, I was like, this is sounds more fucked up than anything I've ever heard. Like, I think this is just like, it sounds like total chaos. It sounds like a fucking like just total chaos. Like, I know I keep using that word, but that's so when I heard that, like, I was like, this is better than black metal. Like, this is like fucking like dark. And oh, and also these guys are actually real gang members. So it's like it's real, like it's not even just and they don't like people liking their band also. So
yeah,
it's just like, that's true like commitment to like saying fuck everything.
Well, that's the thing, is like black metal at least lets you get into the vibe, like it's going to sound evil, it's going to be this thing. At points in Gizm, like they throw in silly parts, so you can never get in a vibe. Like they never let you relax.
You know? I don't know. It's yeah. Like, it's crazy. It's like
silly to voices.
Me, to me, that's like what the fuck? Like, of course, it could all be abrasive and like fucked up, but the fact that they're not afraid to do something weird because they're just like, you know, I actually just remastered. Actually, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this. Fuck. I just remastered the Pope Adrian stuff for Rudimentary Peni.
Whoa.
And like, you want to talk about something that's like the record itself, like really like getting into it. And this is the same thing. I made an attempt to remaster the Gizm record. Dwid from Integrity got Sakevi to agree to let me remaster the early Gizm stuff. And I did that, and he obviously shut it down immediately. But the point is like, I was going in and I was like, kind of like carving EQ and listening that like clearing it up. And there's so much insane shit going on that you can't even hear because it's covered up by like, by everything. Like it's like, there's, it's a whole nother like record. And the same with like rudimentary penis stuff, the Pope Adrian stuff. Like I was like, they really have a guy like on loop chanting the whole record where you can't even like, you really have to focus on the record to be able to hear it while this guy's like chanting the whole time. And like, to me, that's like, that's fucking punk. Like, we're going to make a whole record. It's not even, it's not trolling. We're going to make a whole record and we're just going to have a guy chanting over it the whole time.
Well, it's interesting too, because you like look at, you know, the artwork and the illustration and how detailed that is with rudimentary peni. Mm-hmm. Or you look at Gizem and Sakevi's artwork and how layered it is. And it's all about like building up of different layers and different images on top of each other. And like, it's, they kind of have like an auteur approach to art. Yeah, where the, yeah. You know, it's like same in their music. They're doing that.
Yeah. It's awesome. I did do Death Church and Cacophony also. And I remastered those P&I records that came out recently. And like, as I'm listening to them, I'm just like, this is just, I don't know. It's like, perfection. And these guys are like, they don't give a fuck about anything. It's like, it's awesome.
It's cool because you get to work with like all your heroes.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened. I can't like, I can't fucking complain one bit. I don't know why it's happened, but I'm so grateful for it. And like, I just, at this point, I could get hit by a car and I think I'd be fine with it. So
yeah. Not that I want to get hit by a car, but I mean, like, at the same time, I definitely can see, like, you know, that's, to me, has been the greatest fulfillment is like heroes becoming peers. And
oh my God. I mean, Max Cavalera, for example, there's not a guy in the world that's more, doesn't let you down at all. Like I met Max, and like, I've become friends with Max and Igor. Those guys are just like legit as fuck. And Max is a true Cro-Magnon. Like, he doesn't have a phone, he doesn't have an email address. His whole life is based around the time that he's not like hanging with his like grandkids. He's sitting in a living room with a CDR recording machine and like a drum machine and like a guitar, and watches like a zillion movies all day and just plays like riffs all day. And just like, like, dude, what do you do? Like, you cannot get a hold of him. And he's just like, man, I love fucking this. And he'll like bring up like a new band or something. Like, I'll be like, oh, that Pissgrave shit's good. Or like, or like Black Purse, man, that shit's cool. And I was like, dude, how do you know this shit? How do you have time for this? Like, that's a true like metalhead. Like, you meet him and you're just like, this guy only cares about movies, metal, and like his family, and that's pretty much it. So,
but he's also like a hardcore kid from way back too, dude, like punk kid, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that's another thing. That's why taking back to why I always say I wouldn't be anywhere without hardcore, is that like, we're like doing this record in 2017 called Psychosis, Cavalera Conspiracy, and like, I haven't really got to hang out with Max that much. Like, we had maybe spent like 6 or 7 days together on the road, but we, you know, he does his own thing, and he didn't really know me that well at the time, but he was like into some of the stuff I'd recorded. And when we finally got to work together, like, it was basically, we were talking about like Cro-Mags and Leeway and stuff like that. And we would be making the songs, and we had the board, and we'd be like, Leeway riff 4 times, Cro-Mags riff 4 times. And I was like, am I really hanging out with Max Cavalera, like making like this record with him right now? Like, and Igor, like they're both like, and Igor also, he's a very, very accomplished electronic musician too. Him and his wife Lima teach stuff to kids all over the world, like went to Africa and taught people how to use Ableton and stuff like that. And he came back to do that record from Africa with the flu and did the drums in 4 days while like sweating profusely, and it sounds as tight, if not tighter, than like Beneath the Remains. Like, it's, I just don't know. Those guys just live and breathe music. So that's on that end of getting to work with your heroes. When something like that happens, it's just like, dude, I do not feel let down in any type of way.
Yeah, we played with Igor's electronic thing that he was doing for a while, where like they would DJ.
Yeah.
And then he would go over and play drums.
Yeah, that's
cool. And get up and DJ more. It was wild.
He's like, awesome.
Yeah, really. Well, it's just like, it goes to show that this sort of thing like happens globally, where like punk people like all over the place wind up doing stuff in different genres or different music places, you know?
Not to beat this point to death even more, but I would have never worked with Cavaleiros if it wasn't for hardcore either, because Razzle Dazzle played in Brazil and we met Andrew Klein from Strife and we partied with him, went, came back, and he turned out to be doing Igor's drum teching, invited me to meet Igor in Allentown, Pennsylvania, at this place called Crocodile Rock, worst D-market shit. And I hung out with them, and me and Igor were just like trading techno shit, like on the spot, the first time I ever met him. So if it wasn't for Andrew from Strife and Razzle Dazzle, I never would have met Igor, and then I never would have worked with Igor and Max. So
all comes back to the core.
Yeah. And I highly recommend the record Psychosis from 2017, Cavalera Conspiracy. Just give it a shot if you were a Sepultura fan and you don't really like what they did after Max left. I would check out the record Psychosis that I produced. It's pretty inventive, and like for what they were doing, it's like down that road and a little bit experimental also.
Did you go down to Brazil to record it with them?
No, Max lives in Phoenix. I went to Phoenix.
Okay. And
it was cool. It was in a 6 year called the Platinum Underground that had was built into a bunker. Like this guy John, who's super cool and is also like a pretty wealthy guy, just like dynamited his backyard and built a underground bunker that's like 5-star, and it's like fucking, and you wouldn't ever know it's there because there's just like a little shed garage on top of it. But then you go down, it's like fucking like James Bond shit. You know what I mean? It was awesome.
Well, this has been awesome.
Yeah, and yes.
Anytime, Arthur, we got to do this again at some point. Maybe you and Woj together next time.
That would be fucking hilarious. I would probably just be me and Woj fighting the whole time over details and stuff. So meaningless details, which I've given you plenty of today, plenty of meaningless details. So I hope that your crowd is down to that.
Thank you, Arthur, for coming on the show. And you heard right there, Arthur will be back for a part two at some point in the future, because there's a lot more to get to. And this took forever to come out, so there's probably a lot that's happened in the interim. I know there's a lot that's happened in the interim. Rest in peace to Double Decker Records. And shout out to everyone. Piss Jeans, and there's a lot of stuff that's happened in between these episodes. I'm just racking my brain trying to think of all the things that have happened since then. All right, moving on. Coming up on the next episode of Turned Out a Punk, one of the OGs of the OGs, from the band The Mirrors, from Rockets from the Tombs, from Saucers, from Gizmos currently. We could just go on listing this guy's contributions to music. He wrote some of the greatest punk songs ever. The great Craig Bell will be on this podcast. And Craig is someone I actually met years ago at the Exhibition. And oh my gosh, I am lucky and grateful that I get to sit down and talk to him, because this is, get out your notebooks. There's some good stuff on this one. All right, that is it for me. Remember, as always, Black Lives Matter. The lives and issues faced by Indigenous peoples all over the world matter. We need to protect trans kids and help trans people protect themselves and their rights. Stop hate and violence towards people of different faiths, different races, different nationalities, different identities, because we're not talking about politics here. This is just basic human rights shit. People deserve to live free from hate and violence and discrimination. Ceasefires are not political. They are just basic human rights stuff. So if there's organizations out there that are affecting positive change in this world that can use support in whatever way, and you believe in what they're doing, get involved. Speaking of getting involved, anyone can start a band. Anyone can start a podcast. Believe me, anyone can start a podcast. Anyone can do a fanzine. Just go out there and make your own culture. It gets better when you contribute to it. And anyone can do it. Speaking of things getting better, sign your organ donor cards. Because, yeah, granted, it's not going to be good for you by the time they come looking for those organs. But it will perform a miracle on your way out. And who doesn't like to leave the audience with something as you're walking off stage? A little morbid, but that works. Try meditating. Just try it. Stick with it if it doesn't work at first. And listen, if I'm doing it, anyone can do this shit. I'm living proof that anyone can do any of this shit. That's it for me. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and I will see you on the next episode.